Charles would just strangle me and put me out of his misery. He leaned back and waved his hands. Hello, psychologist? Yes, or almost? Of course I don't know. I believe it will help me, and I think that participating in the hunt will help you with this issue you have with dominant wolves. Like throwing the kid who is afraid of water into the deep end to sink or swim? He grinned. Not so bad as that. I think that if you have something to do, some task, like finding this bait that the Fey Lady and Angus have hidden in the pack's hunting grounds, I think you won't be so afraid. And if you're not afraid, they will not crowd you. And by the time you have a moment to worry about them, he snapped his fingers, they will have been surrounding you, hunting with you, and it will seem silly to be afraid. She looked at him. Charles had suggested something similar, she remembered, though he hadn't intended her actually to participate. The ocean. Like throwing a 2-year-old into the ocean with sharks. He laughed. Look, I am not long a wolf, but I observe. My mentor at the uni, university to you, he says I am a genius. I will give you his number and he will tell you so. He paused, and he grinned a little self-consciously. Of course, he will also tell you I died tragically in a skiing accident. Anyway, it means this. You should listen to me. We wolves are more resilient than when we were human. The wolf is always in the present. It does not worry much about past or future. Your wolf will keep you from panicking if she can. The hunt will give her the help she needs. By the end, you will be better because she will help you. Unless they do kill me, Anna said. No blood, Rick said. It is in the rules. Did you see the way that fairy made the beast shut his mouth yesterday? Or was that after you left? Before, Anna said. And they prefer fae. A fairy is a specific kind of fae, whose actual form is about 12 inches high, and I'm pretty sure that Dana is not one of those. And she will be on hand to keep things safe. They will behave themselves. She knew Charles wouldn't be happy if she chose to be in the hunt. Accidents happen, especially when they are on purpose. Charles had enemies, and it would do her no good to be avenged after she died. She didn't want to make Charles unhappy with her. Look, said Rick, seriously. Isaac, my alpha, will be in this hunt, too. I think he'll agree to bodyguard you with me. No one else is going to be working together. Can you imagine alphas cooperating with each other? The three of us, we stand a better chance at winning. And we can keep you safe. I had two people get hurt trying to defend me yesterday, Anna said. And that was on a shopping trip. Someone tried to hurt you? She knew Charles had called his alpha last night to warn him about the possibility that the vampires had been targeting her because she was in Omega, rather than because she was Charles's mate. Apparently he'd decided not to pass on the news. You should have been told, she said. And then she took care of it. We are viewed as weak, Rick said grimly when she had finished. They decimated the nuts, eaten the lunch delivered by a pair of Angus's wolves, then found a secret stash of trail mix. Rick picked through the bag and took a couple pieces of dried peach. Then he threw them up into the air, catching them in his mouth on the way down in two quick snaps. Maybe it is not just my wolves who need to be told, but everyone else as well. It is not safe in our world to be seen as weak. It makes us prey. If your alpha didn't look at you as some sort of super submissive, he'd have told you about the threat of the vampires, and you'd have been alert to the danger, Anna agreed. He tossed her a couple of banana chips, and she snatched them out of the air without her hands as well. He saluted her. Though, mind you, I think that's a piss-poor way of protecting even the submissive ones. They are not children, they are werewolves. He closed his eyes, tossed a cranberry into the air, and ate it on the way down. You say we are like submissive wolves who do not obey. I wonder if there are dominant wolves who do not protect. Yes. Anna looked up, but Rick had to turn all the way around to see Chastel standing in the doorway. They call us beasts. He smiled at Anna, his eyes hungry. Are you afraid of me, little girl? Rick might as well not have been there, for all the notice took of him. His focus was all on her, his eyes wide and golden. A faint flush over his cheekbones told her that he was excited. He looked just as Justin, the wolf who had changed her, had looked before. She swallowed that thought. This man was looking for prey, and she would not be sport for him. Not for anyone, not ever again. She called up her wolf, not so much to start the change, but to borrow the wolf's courage and let it settle into her bones. When she was certain her knees wouldn't shake, she stood up as the silence gained weight like a brewing storm. She took her time before answering. He displayed the patience of a good hunter. "You're the one who should be afraid," she said finally, letting her matter-of-fact voice carry the message she wanted to give him, that she wasn't afraid of him. Because she was afraid of him, she couldn't tell him she wasn't, but she could lie with the truth and make it stick. "If you touch me, Charles will hunt you down and eat your marrow while you are still alive to scream." She called upon her two acting classes and let her mouth turn up. "I'll be happy to watch." She licked her lips. The smile dropped off his face, and he growled. She wasn't helpless, not like she'd been in Chicago when Justin hunted her down, or later when the pack helped subdue her to his will. Here, the only other person in the room was Rick, and he would help her, not Chastel. Chastel would best her, probably best them both. But she would make sure he was hurt, and then Charles would kill him. Her wolf approved, and her fear slid away, leaving her balanced lightly on the balls of her feet and ready for blood and death. There was only now, between this breath and the next, and that left no time for fear. "Your vampire was lovely. She died too quickly." Anna imitated the motion she'd used to snap the woman's neck. "Hopefully, you'll make a better show."
"My vampire," he dismissed her words with an impatient hand. "You are a fool, and your mate is a thug, lacking in intelligence. Nothing but his father's lapdog, who fetches and kills on command."
She let her smile bloom. "Is that what you think? How foolish of you." With the hand that the Frenchman couldn't see, Rick gestured sharply, trying to get her to stop baiting the beast. She knew it was stupid, but Rick couldn't know that her alternative was cowering in a corner. So, she baited him.
"Salon,"
Chastel snarled. She knew that much French. "Thank you." And suddenly, because she had neither seen nor heard him, Charles was there, standing directly behind Chastel.
"Be careful whom you call a bitch, Jean, mon cher," he said in a voice that was too calm to be believable. "Someone might feel it was an insult."
Chastel turned around, giving Anna his back so he could face the more dangerous one.
"Ah, here he is. Your woman tells me you will hunt me down and eat my marrow while I live."
"Did she?" Charles looked at her, and she saw the approval in his face. She doubted anyone else would have read anything at all. His voice was a caress, just for her. "Would you like that, love?" She clasped her hands under her chin in her best silent film star pose. "Only if I can watch." Charles laughed and, on the tail end of the sound, rounded on Chastel, using the motion to place himself between the Frenchman and Anna, and he wasn't laughing at all.
"Go."
She couldn't see her mate's face, but she saw Chastel flinch and drop his eyes. His hands fisted, but it didn't keep him from taking a step back. With a low oath, he turned and stalked away. Charles tilted his head, obviously listening to Chastel leave.
"While he was still alive," he said.
"Women are the bloodthirsty sex," said Rick sadly. "We get the reputation, but it is only because the women stand behind us and say, 'Kill it, squish it.'"
Anna thought it was time for formal introductions. "Charles, this is Rick. I'm sorry I didn't catch your last name." Rick hopped off the desk, where he'd been crouched and ready to pounce if needed, and held out his hand.
Postinger. Heinrich Postinger.
Charles shook his hand.
I'm Charles Kornick.
Rick looked at Anna.
Your defiance is admirable, but it was not the most brilliant thing I've ever seen anyone do. He's going to come after you now. He must do this.
Rick is a psychologist, Anna explained.
He was going to go after her no matter what she did, said Charles.
Anna grinned. There's a certain satisfaction in knowing that I deserve it, you know?
Better than thinking he's coming after me because I ran like a chicken.
Charles kissed her.
Yes, he said, pulling his mouth away. There is that, isn't there? I have to go back. Everyone is still in the auditorium waiting on me. Would you please lock the door this time? It doesn't do you any good hanging open so anyone can walk in, oh, woman who is not a chicken.
Of course. And with a sudden burst of confidence, she rose on her toes and kissed his chin, which was as high as she could manage. He didn't help, but his eyes were smiling when she finished.
Good, he said, though whether to the kiss or to her agreement to lock the door, he left deliberately up in the air.
He'd reached the door when she remembered there was something he should know. He didn't know anything about the vampires.
When Charles looked back at her, she said,
I told him I killed one of his vampires, and he didn't have any idea what I was talking about.
Chastel was never a good suspect for bringing in vampires, Charles said, but it is good to know for sure.
He smiled at her, then with a nod at Rick, he left, shutting the door behind him. She waited a moment.
Anna?
Charles's voice carried through the metal door,
and so did the exasperation.
She grinned at Rick and turned the deadbolt. Charles tapped the door and left. She couldn't hear him, but she could feel him move farther away from her. It had felt good to defend herself against Chastel, even if it was only with words. She was tired of being afraid of her own shadow, and for a little while, she hadn't been afraid at all. She liked it. With the Fae supervising the hunt, not to mention Charles observing, he wouldn't join the hunt. Like Angus, he was one of the hosts. She would be as safe there as she would ever be, surrounded by alphas. She turned to Rick. If your alpha agrees to help play bodyguard, I'd love to join the hunt tonight. He nodded.
I'll ask him.
Sunny frowned at the nail she'd chipped as she took the elevator down to the parking garage. Arthur was tied up in werewolf functions tonight, so she'd taken the opportunity to have dinner with some friends. She didn't have any close female friends. It is a hard thing not to tell a friend that the reason your husband looks so young is because he's a werewolf, and friends you have for a long time tend to notice things like your husband's not aging at all. So she had condos in various cities, and when she'd lived in a place off and on for a decade or so, she would uproot and move somewhere no one knew her. She'd write letters or emails for a few months, then let the friendship drift away. These women she'd known for a couple of years, casual friends who liked to go out without husband or boyfriend once in a while and talk girl stuff. She'd met them at the gym, and they shared no real interests, but they were smart, funny, and easy to talk to on a superficial level. They made her feel connected, not so alone. She'd left them before dessert, though, because she didn't trust herself not to indulge. The restaurant they'd chosen was justly famous for its exotic cheesecake. She hadn't kept her figure by allowing herself to sample food she might like too much, and she'd noticed it was getting dark. Arthur didn't like it when she was out too late. He worried about her. The elevator opened onto the right level for her car. The light next to the elevator was out. She hurried through the darkness until the next light, then felt silly for her anxiousness. Someone on the other side of the garage was arguing with his girlfriend. Neither of them was very upset. Probably foreplay, she thought. She and Arthur indulged, and she recognized the tone. She looked, but she couldn't see the couple because an SUV was in the way. Before she got a clear view, the sound of car doors shutting cut off the sound of their bickering. A car engine started, and a silver Porsche passed by, its lights momentarily blinding her. She dropped her keys and started to kneel and pick them up. Someone's hand was there first.
Allow me.
The man was taller than her Arthur, though not as wide, through the shoulders. For a minute she was worried, as any woman alone in a parking garage with a stranger would be. But then she saw the cut of his wool coat. Thugs wouldn't wear expensive coats and white linen shirts. "Thank you," she said, as she took her keys out of the leather-gloved hand that held them out to her.
"No troubles," he said. "You'll forgive me the question, but what is a lovely woman like you doing out here, all alone?"
Part of her preened under his obvious admiration. She knew her aging, distressed Arthur. The honest appreciation in a handsome man's eyes soothed a growing wound in her heart. This man looked to be a few years older than she, and his manner was gallant. "I was dining with friends," she told him. "My husband is waiting for me."
"Ah."
He opened his fingers, as if he'd held something precious he had to let go. It was so artfully done that she was certain he had to be an actor or maybe a dancer.
"I should have known that such a lovely woman would not be left free. But a man lives on hope. Your accent is charming. You're British?"
"Yes, and so is my husband. Thank you for the keys and the compliment." She smiled at him and headed for her car with brisk strides that would let him understand that although she appreciated his admiration, she was not available. The smile stayed on her face, warmed a little as soon as she had her back to him. She pressed the button that unlocked her car and opened the door, and a hand closed around her mouth.
"Forgive me a little harmless flirtation," he said in her ear. "It seemed a kindness I could give. I regret that your death will not be so kind. My employer failed me, and so I no longer have to follow his so explicit instructions. My friends are sad, and a little play will make them feel so much better."
She screamed, but the faint noise that escaped his hand wouldn't travel far. His free hand petted her face as he whispered, his breath smelling like peppermint,
"I'll see to it that your husband knows that you didn't flirt with me, that you were faithful to him unto death. Will that soothe him, do you think?"
He was strong. He controlled her struggles effortlessly, even though she worked out on a daily basis. Werewolf. He must be one of the werewolves. "Come, my children," he said, and she realized he wasn't alone. She heard people move behind them, but the only one she could see was the woman who hopped onto the roof of her car. A beautiful woman with honey-colored hair caught up in a ponytail.
"We can play with our dinner?"
the woman asked, and terror made Sonny's knees give way. The woman had fangs, not werewolf. Vampire.
"We're going to see if she is his mate?"
"Or merely his wife, Hannah," her captor said.
"That means yes."
The voice came from her left, but she couldn't see the man who said it. But she felt him pull her arm straight and sink his fangs into the inside of her elbow. It hurt. The Emerald City Pack's hunting grounds were in a warehouse district that had seen better days. Those warehouses nearest the water were lit up and, if not hives of activity, still obviously running with a full shift of people. As the ground rose away from the water, the warehouses began to look less and less prosperous. Following Charles's directions, Anna continued up the battered asphalt road to a pair of huge buildings surrounded by a 12-foot-tall chain-link fence, hospitably topped by razor wire. The whole property looked as though no one had done anything industrious there for 50 years, and none of the other warehouses in the immediate area looked any more occupied. Adding to the general disreputable air, the metal roof of one of the buildings was missing a sheet or ten of roofing material. The people at the gate must have recognized the car because they had it opened for her to drive right on through. As she drove closer to the warehouses, the buildings looked bigger and bigger, and as she passed between them, they shut out the night sky until it was a narrow ribbon with the hunter's moon, just a sliver of silver, in the sky above them. There were 30 or 40 cars in a space big enough to park 100. Most of them were parked next to the larger of the two warehouses, so that was where Anna parked, too.
You're quiet tonight, said Charles.
She looked at her hands and flexed them on the steering wheel, easing her grip when the wheel creaked. She'd meant to keep quiet about joining the hunt, but as the time approached, springing it on him in front of everyone seemed more and more stupid. I have an idea, and you aren't going to like it. He looked at her for a long time, long enough that she finally looked back.
I'm dominant, he told her, as if she didn't already know. And that means I'm driven to take care of those who are mine.
She met his gaze, held it, and realized slowly that it pleased him that she could do so. It pleased her, too.
You want to go into the hunt?
Yes. She expected him to forbid it outright, and realized that part of her had been counting on using that as an excuse to bow out. Instead, he simply asked,
Why?
Because Rick thinks that it might help with this... She dropped her eyes, and then raised them again, and firmed her voice. With the baseless fear that had me shivering in my seat yesterday when the auditorium filled up with alphas, who were ready to kill each other to protect me. It made me feel stupid and weak. I was less frightened when Chastel came into Angus's office, and I had a lot more reason then. His eyes flared gold, and he said in a voice that was lower and rougher than his usual tone,
It's because you fought Justin once, and your pack caught you and held you for him.
Anna nodded jerkily. It hadn't been just for Justin, and it hadn't been just once. And she wasn't about to tell him that, with Brother Wolf looking out through his eyes.
How does Rick think this will help?
Because I'll be focused on the hunt. He thinks that my wolf will help, that she'll keep me from panicking.
He is a psychologist.
She couldn't help but smile. Almost, he says. But not to worry, his mentor thinks he's a genius.
I cannot join the hunt, he said heavily. If I won, it would be a political disaster. If I lost, it would be worse. If you hunt, there are those who will be hunting you rather than the prize, because you are my mate and because you are an Omega.
Chastel.
Chastel is not the only enemy my father has here, and I have a few myself.
I actually thought about that possibility. Rick is hunting tonight. He says that he will keep an eye on me and thinks his alpha, someone named Isaac, will agree to do so also. Charles nodded and opened his door. Charles?
He bent and looked back into the car.
Can I join the hunt?
His eyebrows went up. That was never up to me. You've assessed the benefits and the possible problems. It is up to you.
He closed his door. Anna unbuckled herself and got out of the car. So, what happened to I am dominant and I protect those who are mine? He propped a hip on the front of the car.
If it would benefit you, I would kill every wolf here. But there are things that you need to do, and interfering with that is not protecting, not in my book. The best way for me to protect you is to encourage you to be able to protect yourself.
He gave her a sudden, rueful smile.
I admit it doesn't make me happy, but with Dana and me on watch and Rick and his alpha on the floor, you were as safe as you were going to be in a hunt full of dominant wolves. You've killed a vampire and a witch. You are hardly helpless.
She straightened her shoulders as his confidence lent her courage. So she walked to him and put her arms around him, burying her face in the sweet-smelling warmth of his chest. He wore one of his favorite flannel shirts over a plain red t-shirt, and the cotton was soft against her skin. You are a remarkable man, Charles Cornick. He wrapped his arms around her shoulders and put his chin on the top of her head.
I know, he confided lightly, and often underappreciated by those who don't know any better.
She poked him with a finger and looked up at him. And funny. Though I expect that is another facet of your character that goes unappreciated even more often than your remarkableness.
Some people don't even notice,
he said in a mock mournful voice. The main room in the bigger warehouse was more than 20 feet tall and large enough to swallow all the wolves who had chosen to hunt and leave room for twice as many more. The rest of the wolves, a strong majority, stood on a platform 10 feet above them. Everyone was still in human form. One wall of the room was covered with flat-screen TVs, which were off. Dana stood in the center of the raised platform and spoke. "The rule is no bloodletting, which rule I will enforce. The walls and floors of these buildings, and the earth beneath, will tell me if there is blood. You will start out human and change when the bell is rung. There are 3 leather bags, hidden several days ago, containing a handful of pig sausage each, and one of them also holds a 2-carat star ruby ring provided by the Merrock." As she spoke, the monitors all turned on to show a woman's hand holding a ring in its palm. The setting was plain enough, so that the ring could be either a man or a woman's ring. It was the gem that made the ring beautiful. The ruby was a deep, semi-translucent red, with a star that was almost white. It was beautiful and doubtless valuable, and Anna was pretty sure there wasn't anyone standing on the wooden floor with her who was here for the prize. The hunt was all that was important. How often did an alpha get a chance to pit himself against other alphas without risk to those they must keep safe? Angus spoke while the ring was still on display. "Our hunting grounds encompass both buildings, which interconnect via layers of underground tunnels. This building has between 2 and 6 layers of maze above ground, the other 3 and 4, and both have 3 basement floors original to the structures, and 2 more beneath those that we have added. The 3 bags are hidden here, and 1 contains the ring." Anna glanced at the people around her. Chastel was there, and she recognized Michelle and several of the Spanish wolves she had met at the barbecue restaurant. Arthur, though, was standing just behind Dana, with the ones who had chosen not to hunt. Angus's instructions continued. "Once you find a bag, bring it here. The rules are finders keepers, no thieves. Any wolf carrying a bag is untouchable. We have monitors, we have people hidden, and Dana has given the bags a little extra fey magic to ensure this is the case. Anyone interfering with a wolf carrying a bag will be eliminated from the competition, and the bag will be returned to the finder. You will not be able to open it. Dana has made certain of it. When all 3 bags are here, we will sound an alarm that you can hear from anywhere on the grounds. Return here, and when everyone is accounted for, Dana will open the bags, and the winner will be announced." After Angus conducted a brief question and answer session, it was Charles's turn. He looked at her, then at Rick and his alpha, who stood beside her. "The hunt," he said, "is on." There was a metallic chunk. The lights went off, and Anna had her shirt halfway off before the last of the light died. On the wall, the monitors switched their display from the ruby ring to black with small red letters on the bottom right-hand corner of each, which abruptly provided the only light in the room. Clothing ripped, and soft pain sounds echoed as several dozen werewolves began the change from human to something more. Laughing, breathless, she stripped off her pants and shoes, socks and underwear before she began her own change. Shards of agony spread over her, beginning at the base of her spine and spiraling out to her fingers and toes. Wet pops announced the reshaping of joints and bone as her wolf slid over her skin. Claws and fangs, muscle and fur, wet tracks slid down her face as her eyes watered. Strength surged like the tide rolling in, and she came to all fours with a grunt of effort. The room was too full of others for her to pick up a scent, and her eyes were blind with the last wave of white-hot pain. She stood shaking, then threw her head back, and sang. Alone. Because she was the first to change, it must have been a gift from Brother Wolf and the mate bond they shared. She'd never been able to change that fast before. She could have started her hunt, but Rick and his alpha were still caught in the change, so she stood over them, ready to protect them if they should need it. By 1s and 2s, other wolves rose. When they got too close to her, she displayed her fangs, and they let her be. Rick's alpha, Isaac, now a winter white wolf who was only a little larger than she, stood up, and they both waited for Rick, who was finished only a few minutes later. He wobbled like a newborn lamb when he came to his feet, not experienced enough yet to wait for brain and muscle to reconnect. She put her shoulder against him and let him lean on her. In his human form, he was average height and build, maybe even a bit lean. His wolf was on the large side, certainly bigger than she or Isaac. In the dark, her eyes gave her shapes, but not colors. He was darker than his alpha, but several shades lighter than she, but she couldn't tell if he was gray, brown, or red. He shook himself as though he were wet, and, as if that were a signal, his alpha surged forward, leaving Anna and Rick to follow. They ran first through a hallway and into a narrow stairway that led down and down, and the scents changed from fresh air to musty and moldy. After a minute or two, the Stygian blackness resolved into something more fathomable to Charles's wolf-enhanced vision. A hole in the ceiling let in some starlight, and the monitors began to show orange and red and gold as wolves passed by the infrared cameras scattered throughout the maze and lit the big room with the warmth of their bodies. Even though he couldn't see her, Brother Wolf told him she'd already completed her change. The first to do so, he thought. He expected her to run immediately, but she waited. "For her guards," said Brother Wolf approvingly. He wasn't happy about Anna running this hunt while they were stuck with the wolves who chose not to go. He wasn't especially happy about missing the hunt himself, particularly with Chastel out there somewhere. Only the knowledge that Anna had allies kept Brother Wolf under wraps. Groans of pain turned to howls, and the sound of claws digging into wood as the last of the wolves entered the hunt, and finally silence descended upon the room. Charles heard a rustle and a click, and a bank of dim lights illuminated the room.
"Lights are still off everywhere else," said Angus. "It'll be a while before we see any of them again, and we might as well be comfortable. Come, my wolves are setting up tables and chairs on the main floor where we can watch the action."
It took a while, but most of the watchers caught the trick of identifying friends and enemies, even on the infrared. Hoots of laughter as traps were sprung and wolves fell into water or garbage or foam packing peanuts. Nets dropped unexpectedly, and one caught six wolves in a net meant for one. When they were finished with it, there wasn't a scrap bigger than 8 inches long.
"Way to kill a defenseless net," said Arthur dryly,
his crisp English voice carrying over the crowd. Charles stood in the back, his arms folded, and his eyes tracking the heat trace image of three wolves as they left one monitor, only to reappear in the next. Arthur stood up suddenly and staggered, knocking over the table next to him. The occupants turned on him with surprised snarls, but he didn't seem to notice them.
"Sonny,"
he said, his voice cracking like an adolescent boy's. The wolves who'd been knocked about stilled their protests, and when his eyes rolled up in his head and he fell, one of them caught him before he hit the planks of the floor. Chapter 9. "Which way? Which way?" Anna, her tongue lolling out to absorb the coolness of the air, decided to let the others choose. Her breath sang out of her throat, and exultation made her shiver. The hunt. It didn't matter that the moon song was only a will-o'-the-wisp chime in her heart, or that the prize was a bag of pork that had been spoiling for 2 days and might or might not also have a ring inside. For the first time ever, she loved the hunt, even when Charles wasn't running beside her.
"Because we are with you," Brother Wolf told her. "That is what mating means. You are never alone, never so long as we live."
"Good," she told him.
They'd followed Angus's scent for a long time, before it ended in a note propped in front of a very small battery emergency light. It read, "I didn't hide any of them. Angus." They weren't the first ones there. She could smell the scents of several other wolves, and another wolf showed up just as they were leaving. Then Rick had picked up another scent, presumably belonging to another of Angus's pack, though she didn't recognize it. And she'd been hot on his tail when his alpha threw his weight against her and she stumbled sideways against the wall as a net snapped up and jerked Rick off his feet in a nicely packaged bundle. Between her jaws and Isaac's, it had taken them only a moment to get it off, after they teased him a little. 5 turns later, they'd come upon a wolf hanging upside down in a tall shaft that ran all the way to the open air some 4 stories above their head. Isaac made a noise in his throat that sounded sympathetic, and probably wasn't. The trapped wolf snarled as they left him behind, and Rick's alpha appeared extremely happy for a while after that. Anna caught Moira's scent and led them through a tunnel no more than 2 feet around that was such a tight fit Isaac was very unhappy, and Rick had to drop to his belly to squeeze through. It dumped them off into a small, almost airless chamber. They were coughing with distress by the time Rick managed to destroy the 2x6 wooden wall lined with a moisture barrier that had kept the air out. Anna and he had to drag Isaac by the scruff of his neck into a place with better air, though it was smelly, not in a good way, and stale.
"Anyone here have Arthur's mate's cell phone number?"
Charles growled. No one answered, and so he took his own cell and dialed his father for it.
"What's wrong?" asked Bran when he answered on the first ring. "That's what we're trying to find out. Do you have Sonny, Arthur's mate's cell phone number here in Seattle?"
"Yes, give me a second."
As good as his word, Bran was back on in a moment and read him off the number.
"I'll call you when I know what's happened," Charles said,
and he hit the end button. He called it, but was unsurprised, given Arthur's distress, that she didn't answer. Then he called another number.
"I need to know where this cell phone is. 360-555-1834. GPS location, then an address for that if there is one."
He didn't bother waiting for a reply, just hung up. Arthur was pale and sweating, his skin chill to the touch. His body twitched, but he remained unconscious. It would take a while before his man could track the phone. Hacking a system without leaving a trail took time. He could have done it, given a computer, internet access in a few days. His man was better. But time was not Sonny's friend. 20 minutes passed, maybe 25, before his phone rang. "Charles?"
"Yes?"
"That phone is about a quarter mile from yours, and it isn't moving."
He looked at Angus. "I have to check this out. You watch over her for me?"
The Emerald City Alpha nodded.
"I, my pack, Isaac, his Omega, and the Fae. We all will watch."
They found Sonny just outside the fence, 100 yards from the locked gate, naked, broken, and dead. Just in case they didn't spot the body, a sky-blue Jaguar, that he presumed was her car, was stopped a couple of body lengths away, with the driver's side door hanging open. Sonny's body was still warm, and her eyes were open, fogged with death. A spirit knelt beside her, one of the forest folk. He seldom saw them, though he could tell when they were about. The spirit's slender brown hands petted Sonny's cheek as it crooned to her, so he knew that Sonny had been alive when they dumped her here. The spirit was a shy thing, slipping away as men, who didn't notice its presence, surrounded the corpse. It brushed against Charles, and he felt its sorrow pull his own spirit.
"Poor thing," it told him. "She was so scared alone. She was all alone."
Distracted, Charles barely remembered to stop the others before they could touch her.
"Let me catch the scent," he said, "so I'll know her killer."
It wouldn't help to question the spirit. They told him what they wanted to, whether he wanted to hear it or not. The other wolves backed away, and he set his nose between her neck and jaw, where scent would linger. And he smelled, not unexpectedly, a familiar villain. How many things could there be running around in the night targeting werewolves and their kin? He didn't touch her as he moved from one pulse point to the next. Where the vampires had fed, the flesh was torn, but there had been no time for bruising. And they had fed everywhere. He smelled her fear, her suffering, and stood her witness. He was thorough, making sure they hadn't added to their hunting party. But he found no surprises. There were just the 4 vampires who'd attacked Anna. Brother Wolf went wild as he understood that this could have been her. This could have been their Anna lying here. Charles closed his eyes and forced his body to stillness. Long, cool fingers stroked his face and sang to the wolf, which didn't help. What a forest spirit was doing out here in the middle of the city, he didn't know, and he seized upon the distraction of the mystery it offered. He opened his eyes and looked around. There were any number of abandoned warehouses nearby, and blackberries, the infamous weed of the Pacific Northwest, were taking over their empty parking lots, creating a sanctuary for those who didn't mind their thorns. One mystery down. Charles let the sound of one of his grandfather's songs run through his head, bringing clarity and peace, despite the spirit that patted and petted him. If he'd been alone, he would have knocked the spirit away. Brother Wolf didn't like to be touched by anyone except Anna, but no one else could see it, and he had enough of a reputation for oddness. He didn't need people to know that he saw things no one else did, too. When he could be reasonably sure that Brother Wolf would allow him to behave in a civilized manner, he stood up.
"Vampires," he said. "Bring her into the warehouse for Arthur."
It wouldn't help the British Wolf, except as confirmation that she was out of the vampires' hands. Frustrated, Anna looked at the bag dangling 20 feet over their heads, up one of the long shafts that occasionally perforated the ceiling of this level. After their near disaster with the airless room, Anna was pretty sure that the shafts were useful. As she stared at it, a wolf snatched victory out of their reach. It was too dark to be sure who it was, even if she had known all the other wolves in their furred form. The wolf leapt out of an opening a story above the bag, snatched the prize, and disappeared into another opening a floor lower, still well over Anna's head. Watching helplessly as their prize was stolen out from under, okay, above their noses, was maddening. Isaac snorted in disgust. And Brother Wolf was surrounding her, his anxiety, his fear and love making her stagger against Isaac, which Brother Wolf did not like at all. Something was wrong, but when she asked, Brother Wolf couldn't or wouldn't tell her. She had to get to Charles, now. The problem was, Anna didn't know precisely how to get back. Oh, she could have backtracked, but they had wandered all over the place and would have to go through the narrow tunnel again. Up would be good. She was running full speed ahead when a white wolf pushed in front of her. A second wolf was hard on her tail, Isaac and Rick. It was Isaac who found the first set of stairs headed up. They emerged on the ground floor of the smaller warehouse, and when they made for the door, a werewolf in human form stopped them. "If you cross the outer door, you are officially done," he said. The alpha wolf stared coldly at him, and the man dropped his eyes, throwing up his hands as he backed away. "Just saying what I'm told, man. You go outside, that's out of bounds." They ran past him and out into the fresh air. Rick, his fur gray in the light of the yard, sneezed his pleasure at leaving the underground labyrinth behind. Anna took in a deep breath and smelled vampire. She stumbled to a halt, examining their surroundings for the enemy. At last, she saw him, standing on the other side of the chain-link fence, 100 yards away. It took a moment for her eyes to link the spiffily dressed older man to the vicious killer she'd last seen sitting on top of Tom, but her nose had already made the connection. She'd gotten 2 good strides in when she hit the side of the white wolf, who'd run in front of her to stop her, his attention on the vampire as well. The dead man laughed and motioned with his hand. A blue minivan drove up, and he climbed in. It took off before he'd finished closing the door. Isaac growled low in his chest, an echo of the noise she was making, too. He'd known what that one was, all right. Rick gave them both a puzzled look, but Anna had never run into vampires before yesterday, either. There didn't seem to be much point in sticking around here, so Anna turned and made for the main room of the bigger warehouse, where the lights were blazing. Brother Wolf's presence, an ache in her chest. Inside the warehouse, all of the wolves who had stayed in human form were gathered in a tight group, focused inward. There were too many of them for her nose to tell her anything. All of the clothes had been pushed against the wall, and it took her a while to sort hers out. By the time she had them collected, Charles had found her. His eyes were all for the gathering in the center of the room, and there was an odd stiffness to his body that worried her. She changed, her body protesting the shift even more than it had when she'd taken wolf form. She, like all the wolves, had been well trained not to make much noise while she shifted. But damn, it hurt. "Ow, ow, ow," she whispered, a as her hands slowly, gratingly, reluctantly reformed as wholly human. She tucked them under her arms and squeezed, the pressure helping the pain. Every change was different, but she hated the ones where her hands were the last thing to make it to human. There's so many nerves in a hand, and all of them hurt. It left her lightheaded. Charles growled at her pain. She looked up, but there was no one anywhere close to them. Rick and his alpha were still caught up in their change on the other side of the pile of clothing. She glanced at him and let her body grow still. His eyes were yellow, and the corner of his mouth twitched, then twitched again, as if he had a nervous tic.
Charles?
Her voice was still hoarse from the change.
Sonny's dead.
His voice was guttural, and she knew that he was on the verge of something. Anna worried about it for all of half a second before his words registered.
Arthur's Sonny?
He nodded a quarter of an inch, his eyes locked on her face.
Vampires. We found her body just outside the gates.
And the vampires had hidden, waiting for the wolves to find Sonny. When he, the vampire in the suit, saw Anna, he made sure she saw him, too. Staring into those wild gold eyes, she decided it was something she would tell Charles in a while. The vampires were gone. She had the plate number, but it wouldn't matter. Probably the van was rented anyway. A wolf howled, a wild, mournful cry, and half a dozen other voices lifted in song to show their sympathy for one who had lost his mate. All of them from human throats. Charles held out his hand, and Anna let him pull her to her feet. She was a little stiff still, and he looked as though he needed something to do. He used his body to shield her from the sight of anyone in the rest of the room, as if he knew she didn't really like being naked in front of a bunch of strangers. Most wolves got over that in the first year of being changed. For Anna, it was still an effort. Not because of modesty, but because clothing gave her the illusion of safety from the attention of the males of her first pack. She grabbed her clothing and put it on as quickly as she could, shoving her feet into her tennis shoes while she tucked her socks in her pockets.
"Is Arthur all right?"
she asked. Charles closed his eyes and pulled her to him, pressing his nose into the crook of her neck, breathing in like a marathon runner.
"No," he said, "and neither am I."
Her skin hurt, her bones ached, and she wanted to be held as much as a person who'd fallen asleep on the beach for 4 hours without sunscreen would want to cuddle. But because he needed it, she relaxed against him. Sonny had been killed by vampires.
Sonny would have been an Omega if she'd been turned.
She made it a statement, but she meant it as a question.
Yes.
Anna shivered, and his grip tightened. Her change-sensitive skin protested, her sore muscles complained, but her wolf wanted to burrow inside of him, to keep him safe.
She was here. She was safe.
He let the reality of her scent, push away the need to make something bleed. He was holding her too tightly, he knew it, just as he knew she needed time to recover, and he couldn't give it to her. The sound of her pain as she changed had stirred the wolf up again. Brother Wolf wanted blood or sex, and he wasn't going to get either. No blood and no sex, not until he calmed down a lot. Brother Wolf wouldn't hurt Anna, but he might scare her. Holding Anna was the next best thing. Gradually, as she softened against him, Brother Wolf consented to settle down a bit. It would be a long time before he calmed enough to cede Charles full control again. It was too easy to see Arthur's agony and understand that it could have been his own. The attacks were odd, too focused on the wrong things, the wrong people to accomplish anything. The attack on Anna could have been an attempt to kidnap her for ransom or hostage, but Sonny's death accomplished nothing. Anna's death would accomplish nothing. He couldn't see why Omegas would be targeted, especially since one wasn't a wolf. So maybe they had targeted the mates of two of the three most powerful or dominant wolves at the conference. What would that accomplish, especially given that the talks had done all that they could? He couldn't see the shape of what the vampires or whoever hired them were after yet. Nothing fit. Omega. Anna thought the vampires were working for a wolf. Her personal experience with the enemy gave her instincts weight, and he would trust her insight. Brother Wolf did, and that was good enough for him. Whatever the ultimate goal, Charles could think of at least one reason why a wolf might hire someone to murder Sonny and attack Anna. A wolf, especially a dominant wolf, would have a hard time deliberately hurting an Omega, even a human Omega. Maybe even Chastel wouldn't have been able to do it. Charles made himself let Anna go and stepped back to give her space. He tried to ignore the relief in her body posture. It wasn't a reaction to him. It was the feel of the change still lingering on her flesh that made her want to stand alone.
"You're the first ones back," he told Anna. "What brought you in so early?"
She gave him an odd look.
"Brother Wolf told me you needed me here."
He had no idea what to say to that. Should he admit that he had no idea what Brother Wolf had been up to? Would that worry her? Before he had to make a decision, Dana broke free of the group around Arthur and approached Charles.
"There is some concern for Arthur's sanity," she murmured softly as soon as she was close.
And there were no other wolves here who would stand a chance of controlling Arthur if he lost it, she meant. They needed him to be on watch.
"I'm coming," Charles said.
"I'll come over too," Anna told him. "It can't hurt, right?"
He didn't want her anywhere near the other wolves. There were too many of them. If they all attacked her, there was no way for him to protect her. But an Omega wolf could be useful.
"Thank you," he told Anna as he argued silently with Brother Wolf. "That would help."
Arthur was sitting on the ground, cradling his mate in his arms and whispering to her while the others held a wary vigil. His face was streaked with tears and his nose ran.
"Sonny girl. My Sonny girl."
He looked up and his eyes focused on Charles.
"She's gone."
"Yes," Charles said.
"Vampires did this," he whispered.
Then he roared, his voice echoing in the tall room.
"They hurt her!"
"I know. I will find them."
"Kill them."
Arthur's face was ravaged, almost unrecognizable in his grief and rage, in his pain.
"I will."
Arthur tightened his hold on his wife, tucking her head against his shoulder.
"She hated growing old," he said, rocking her. "Now she won't have to. My poor Sonny girl."
Angus said to Charles, though he made no effort to quiet his voice,
"He'll survive. If the madness was going to take him, it would have already done so. That being so, it might be a good thing to remove our fallen and wounded from the hunting grounds altogether."
He looked at Arthur a moment.
"Arthur, would you let us take you home? The others will be here soon, fresh from the hunt."
A dead body smelling of fear and pain was not probably going to send any of these wolves into a frenzy, but there was no use in taking the chance.
"Yes."
Arthur stood up, his wife cradled in his arms. Charles thought that Angus might be a little too quick to pronounce Arthur well. He swayed a little and looked shocky. Still, it would be better to get him away from the hunt. But he couldn't go alone. He hadn't brought any of his pack, a statement of strength and, maybe, trust, but that left him alone in a foreign country with his dead wife. Angus met Charles's eyes briefly. Maybe he saw the panic in them. Charles wasn't up to comforting Arthur tonight. Offering comfort wasn't something he was very good at on his best day. The Emerald City Alpha looked over his shoulder at one of his wolves.
"Send someone to find Alan Chu. Bring me Tom."
He glanced at Charles, not long enough to be a challenge, just enough to indicate he was talking to him when he said,
"Alan's cousins own a funeral parlor. His family takes care of our dead. They know what we are, and they can help Arthur now. And if Tom and his witch can fight off a pack of vampires, they should be able to keep Arthur on track."
"You wanted me, Angus? I was just outside."
Tom's usually easy glide was a little stiff, the only thing that showed he wasn't fully recovered from his fight. His calm gaze took in the distraught werewolf and Sonny's corpse.
"I see. You send someone after Alan, too?"
"Yes.
Gather a couple more pack members, your witch and Alan. He'll be here in a moment. And see if you can settle Arthur in for the night at his house.
Charles pulled out his wallet and extracted one of Arthur's cards. He had two, one from his father and one from Arthur.
This is where he's living in Seattle. Someone should take his wife's car back to his house as well. It's the Blue Jaguar parked just inside the gate. I don't know what he drove here.
I do.
Tom took the card.
I'll see to it.
And within a few minutes, he'd extracted Arthur, the body, and a handful of Angus's wolves as skillfully as a surgeon. And the first victor of the hunt came into the room just as the door closed behind Tom. Charles looked around for his Anna and found her talking to Rick and Isaac, her face solemn.